State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th. At 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
The world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club.
Man, what the hell is this, man?
Breakfast Club, bitches.
I'm glad they put y'all together. Y'all are like a mega force. Y'all just took over everything.
Wake your punk ass up.
This Chris Brown. I've officially joined The Breakfast Club. Say something, motherfucker.
I'm with it.
The world's most dangerous morning show. Breakfast Club, bitches!
Good morning, USA!
Good morning, Angela Yee.
Good morning, DJ MV.
Charlamagne the God.
Peace to the planet. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
Pump day.
And good morning, Toronto.
Six.
Shout out to everybody in the six, Toronto. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody on this hump day?
Woo. Well, today I definitely need to take my vitamins. But
Why is that?
Well, yesterday was a long day. After the show, Angie Martinez and I spoke to Tamika Palmer, who is Breonna Taylor's mother. Breonna Taylor would have been 27 on Friday, but this was all after over the weekend we had a Zoom call. And Breonna Taylor's mother still hasn't gotten justice for the police killing her. This was in Louisville, Kentucky on March 13th. The police officers who they had the no-knock warrant, which I know a lot of people have been having conversations about no-knock warrants right now, and they have even temporarily suspended them in Louisville, Kentucky. But they went to her house thinking that somebody was selling drugs out of her home. Turns out they had the wrong address, and the person had already been apprehended 4 hours earlier. They broke down her door and started shooting and ended up killing her. They shot her 8 times. And they still haven't gotten justice. The police officers haven't been fired. There's no charges, nothing. So this happened on March 13th again. And so right now we want to just make sure everybody knows the story and make sure that police do at least something has to happen for these police officers so that Tamika can feel some sort of justice was served. And she talks about how alone she felt. You know, this all happened when coronavirus was early on in the stages, so people were distracted by that, and she's been getting the runaround, and there's different stories, and she gets to tell her whole story. So Angie Martinez and I came together to do this interview yesterday just because a lot of women, things are happening with women, also with Black women, and their stories aren't being told, and there hasn't been justice served in a lot of those, so we want to make sure that we actually amplify their story.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear this conversation because there's so many details that you just don't know. It's kind of since coronavirus and the COVID-19 and George Floyd and the protests, you really didn't necessarily get this full, complete story. You didn't hear the impact of this story. So I'm excited about this conversation.
Yeah, the sad part about stories like Breonna Taylor is it's like out of sight, out of mind, right? Because you have videos for everything else. It's visuals for Ahmaud Arbery. Mm-hmm. It's visuals for George Floyd. You know, being that it's not a visual for Breonna Taylor or other people that get killed at the hands of the police, you know, people seem not to focus attention and energy on those.
They forget about it so fast. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited about this conversation. Also,
and there was a 911 call, by the way, that is heartbreaking when you hear it, because when you hear her boyfriend calling 911, I was like broke down when I listened to that. It's hard to listen to.
And also, Russell Simmons will be checking in this morning. You know, Russell Simmons, the founder of Def Jam and the founder of so many different things. He'll be checking in to talk about a new book he has coming out shortly. It's called Eat to Live. And we're also going to be talking about everything that's going on in Russell Simmons' life. So there's a lot going on with Russell Simmons. And we're going to talk about all that today, this morning.
That was hard for me, too.
All the allegations against him.
So we'll talk to him as well. So let's get the show cracking. Front page news, what are we talking about?
Well, let's talk about the chaos during the primaries that happened in Georgia yesterday. Long lines, a lot of confusions. I don't know what's going to happen with voting machines and provisional ballots and all of that, but we'll give you some updates on what happened yesterday when people went to go vote.
All right, we'll get into that next. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Let's get in some front page news. Where are we starting, Yee?
Well, let's start with voting in Georgia. There were a lot of voting delays across the state, and officials are calling for investigations. They're going to be investigating why voters spent 4 hours at some point standing in line. It was a hot June day, and people were supposed to be voting. Some voting was extended to 9:30 p.m., more than 2.5 hours after they were supposed to close. And at least one precinct stayed open until 10:10 p.m. So imagine that. Some people were leaving because they just couldn't wait any longer. And so right now, it looks like voting machines were down. There were limited provisional ballots. People were saying voter suppression is happening right now, particularly in Black communities. That's where a lot of this went down. They said, we cannot let this happen in November. So...
Oh, God. I've sat on this radio and gotten on cable news networks numerous times and said, with possible Russian interference, voter depression, meaning people not enthused about the candidate, and voter suppression, how are you going to beat Donald Trump in November? And all you hear Democrats say is, we have to get the largest voter turnout in American history. Well, guess what, people? Hope is not a strategy. What is the plan to beat things like voter suppression? How? It's got to be a plan, right?
State election officials are saying there were all kinds of issues, like inexperienced election workers, safety issues because of coronavirus, the heightened use of absentee ballots, and they're saying that there were malfunctioning equipment and all kinds of things that were happening. And Democrats are looking to defeat two Republican senators in 2020 in a state where they haven't had a Democratic senator elected in 20 years.
We know that voting critical. Is going to happen. We know that voting is going to happen. We know these, you know, election booths will be open. There's nothing in place to prevent possible voter suppression. Nothing.
There's
nobody
policing
that. I don't know, man. Good luck.
What's going to happen in November?
I don't know, because hope is not a strategy. All you hear Democrats say is, we need the largest voter turnout in American history. What are you doing to get that? What are you doing to galvanize people, energize people, and garner people to come out? You think just fear of Donald Trump is going to be enough? I don't know if that's the case.
And yesterday was also the day that George Floyd was laid to rest. That's when they had the service that actually was a private service. So people were, you know, Monday, yesterday, they did have people waiting in long lines and in the heat. More than 6,300 people waited to pay their respects. But yesterday's service lasted close to 4 hours. It was only invited guests. Those guests included people like Floyd Mayweather Jr., who actually paid for the funeral services, Slim Thug, Paul Wall. Of course, attorney Ben Crump was there, Reverend Al Sharpton. The mayor, Sylvester Turner, was there as well in Houston. And some of the people who spoke included Brooke Williams, who is George Floyd's niece.
Mm-hmm. And I can breathe. Long as I'm breathing, justice will be served. My uncle was a father, brother, uncle, and a cousin to many. Spiritually grounded and activist. He always moved people with his words. Their officer showed no remorse while watching my uncle's soul leave his body. Why must this system be corrupt and broken? Laws were already put in place for the African-American system to fail. And these laws need to be changed. No more hate crimes, please. Someone said, make America great again. But when has America ever been great?
For Black people. Rest in peace, George Floyd.
And Joe Biden spoke via... Joe Biden spoke via video. Here's what he said.
Why in this nation do too many black Americans wake up knowing that they could lose their life in the course of just living their life? We cannot leave this moment thinking we can once again turn away from racism that stings at our very soul. It's about who we are, what we believe, and maybe most importantly, who we want to be, to ensure that all men and women are not only created equal, but are treated equally. We can heal this nation's wounds and remember its pain, not callous the heart and forget.
I was surprised he didn't actually go. I was really surprised.
And Reverend Al Sharpton, who was there, spoke as well.
All over the world, George, they're marching with your name. Even in a pandemic, people are walking out in the streets because you've touched the world. And as we lay you to rest today, the movement won't rest until we get justice, until we have one standard of justice. Your family's gonna miss you, George. But your nation is going to always remember your name because your neck was one that represented all of us, and how you suffered represented our suffering. Mm.
Other people who were there were families of people who have loved ones that were killed by the police, like Eric Garner's mother was there, mm-hmm. Baltham Jean's sister, the family of Pamela Turner, the father of Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin's. Al Sharpton also recognized Trayvon Martin's mother and the father of Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah, definitely. Rest in peace, George Floyd. All right, Mom. That's your front page news. Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, hit us up right now. Phone lines are wide open. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
I'm dialing.
Hey, what you doing, man?
I'm dialing.
I'm calling you.
This is your time to get it off your chest, whether you're mad or blessed. 800-585-1051. We want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
Hello, who's this?
You. What's good, MV?
What's up, Trav? Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, ye.
Hey, what's up, Trav?
How you doing, boo?
I'm good. How are you, boo?
I'm doing good. What's going on, Charlamagne?
Peace. What up, sis?
Chilling like a villain. Hey, man, I'm gonna try to say this without bringing down a black woman, right? But I have to get something off my chest. So somebody has to take Just Not That Hilarious phone away from her, bro. Like, she is a bold-faced liar, and I'm tired of it, yo. Like, the same way that we're not tolerating racism anymore is the same way I'm not about to tolerate any type of discriminatory behavior from anyone, man. She went on a rant. And in her rant, she stated that just because she called somebody a F-A-G, that it shouldn't upset the entire LGBT community. And that just sounds so stupid to me, because it's like if a white person calls somebody a and he only means it to that one individual black person, it's going to affect everybody in the black community. So when you call a 16-year-old black man, you know, young man, a F-A-G, and he didn't call you a and that's just what it is. And she's a bold-faced liar. That young man never called her a trash. He called her a horse face and said that she looks like a man. And she needs to stop lying. She's a bold-faced liar, and I'm tired of her. Cancel.
You definitely don't like Just Hilarious. I didn't see that what transpired. So you really broke it down for me.
Oh, you on this whole rant about y'all don't have a platform. Like, everybody that has an Instagram has a platform. Some people's platforms just happen to blow up. Like, Jess Hilary, if nobody needs you, you're not a celebrity for real. Like, stop it. She is also in her 40s calling a 16-year-old a
Jess Hilary is in her 20s, crazy.
I know how old she is, man. She just looks like she's in her 40s, though.
You see what I'm saying?
Trav.
You can't. Now you disrespecting her. Come on now.
But that's not. No, but still, there's a difference. But so this is because I called. This is because I told a white woman, you look like a horse, and she called me a You're going to have a problem with this. So have the same problem with the same people who do the same thing to black LGBT.
You don't like the slurs.
I don't like the slur, and I know exactly what Billy Porter's talking about. And Charlamagne, you can sit and act like you don't know what he's talking about black people are intolerant. No, there are some black people who literally be like, oh, if he looks at me like this, I'll kill him because he's
stop
gay.
That was a terrible analogy that he used, because white supremacy is the same. White supremacy is what kept gay people from getting married. White supremacy is what kept gay people from having the same rights. Like, black people weren't doing that.
Charlamagne, He's not talking about that.
Just say black people have been intolerant over gay people over the years. Don't say white supremacy, bro. Come on now.
Well, hold on. I don't say white supremacy, but what I'm talking about, though, you said intolerant. No, there are some black people who just hate gay black people because they're gay. It's not intolerance. It's called hate. But it's
still not white supremacy. White supremacy is oppressing your rights and marginalizing your rights.
I understand white supremacy.
White supremacy, but Billy Porter did, though. That's what I'm saying. That's why I said it was a bad analogy.
I'm not Billy Porter.
Well, thank you, Trav, for calling in and checking in.
Trav is very passionate this morning about everything.
Jeesh. All right. Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, hit us up now. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on Earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Let's go. This is your time to get it off your chest. Whether you're mad or blessed.
Say it with your chest.
We want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
So if you got something on your mind, let it out.
Hello, who's this?
Yo, good morning. What's up, Envy? What's up,
man? Hey, good morning, brother.
What up, Charlemagne?
Good morning.
Hey, get it off your chest, bro.
Yo, first and foremost, man, I want to say peace to everybody upon us listening, man. We got to spread love more and more each and every day, man. But also, man, I want to talk about this George Floyd video real quick, man. First of all, rest in peace to the brother. It's a shame that he's not here no longer. But if you peep the video, man, look at the paramedics. They didn't look like regular paramedics. They didn't even do anything that most paramedics are supposed to do on.
Yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday too. Like, should they be charged as well? They didn't try to resuscitate him. They didn't give him CPR. They look kind of crazy too. I didn't see them do anything on him.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So my concept, and I mean, not to be a conspiracy theorist, but like it just looked too choreographed. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know. And then look where everything is at right now. Why I take this one brother for everybody to just really uproad, and it seemed like a plan that everybody just followed step and fell right into place.
I think that it was a lot of different factors, man.
It's a combination of a lot of things.
We've been home for 3 months because of the coronavirus pandemic, and you know, people have been sitting in the house. People don't have jobs right now, so they really don't have anything to do but go out there and protest, which is a great thing. And you got to think, if everybody was at work and had jobs to go to, you'd probably forgot about George Floyd already. Sadly,
I guess I can agree to disagree with that, but I don't know, man. I just feel like this becomes such more political now than ever. You know what I mean? And it goes
it
from...
It is an election year.
Police brutality. I mean, indeed. But it goes from police brutality to, again, as always, black against white. Black against white.
Well, there are a lot of policies that are being initiated because of what's been happening and because of bringing attention to George Floyd.
Well, thank you for calling, brother.
George Floyd is dead because of systemic racism. So it's not black against white. It's us versus white supremacy. It's us versus systemic racism.
Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, you can hit us up now. We got rumors on the way, Yee?
Yes, we are going to be talking about a TV show that has gotten canceled. And this show has been on the air since 1989.
All right. We'll get into that next. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Let's get to the rumors. Let's talk about a show that might never come back.
It's about time.
What's going on?
Rumor report. Rumor report. This is The Rumor Report.
Talk to him.
With Angela Yee on The Breakfast Club.
Well, Cops and some other law enforcement themed shows have been canceled. The Paramount Network has officially pulled the plug on Cops. Now, Cops started airing on Fox. They aired on Fox for 25 seasons, and then Spike TV started airing it in 2013. And then after that, the Paramount Network acquired the show from Spike TV. Now they are saying Cops is not on the Paramount Network, and we don't have any current or future plans for its return. The 33rd season of the show was supposed to start on Monday, but no episode has aired since June 1st. That's when obviously, there's been a lot of protests against police brutality, a lot of people supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that. So it originally premiered back in 1989. And right now, they've been under fire for its depiction of law enforcement and for the questionable practices behind the scenes.
I mean, does that mean something to people? Do folks like that as a win? Like cops
taking
being
cops
canceled?
Off?
I don't care about Cops TV show being canceled. I care about cops being fired and brought to justice in a court of law. I care about the Justice of Policing Act, you know, that bans the type of chokeholds that killed George Floyd. I care about that because that bans no-knock warrants in cases like the one that killed Breonna Taylor, like New York passing the Arizona Anti-Chokehold Act. I care about stuff like that. I care about Governor Cuomo pushing to pass the Amy Cooper bill, making it a hate crime to call 911 with a false accusation of racism. Like, I don't care if the Cops TV show got canceled. That means nothing.
Well, you know, another show, Live PD, which shows on A&E, also was pulled from the air. Now, what's interesting about that, I don't know if you guys have been hearing about Javier Ambler. He was a 40-year-old father of two. He was a postal worker. And he died last year on March 28th, 2019, while being arrested in Austin. And they were actually filming Live PD during that episode.
I was going to say with those shows, doesn't it make it good that they have people recording to see what those police officers are actually doing? You pull those things off air, like, you know, who's taping them? There's nobody taping them. Like, don't we want
to
see the footage?
Body cameras, right? And footage on the cars. But the problem is this. They're saying that a lot of times on those shows, they overreact to situations. Like in the case of Javier Ambler, they said he was pulled over because he didn't dim his SUV headlights to oncoming traffic. He ended up getting tasered four times. And they said he was saying he has congestive heart failure. He couldn't breathe. He was crying out, save me. And then they tased him again.
Actually. Yeah, I seen that yesterday.
Yeah, and this, mind you, this happened last year in March.
Yeah,
and
I seen
so,
that yesterday.
And this was all during a taping for Live PD that this happened. And there were a lot of complaints from local people about how the cops were treating them because they were filming the show. And they felt like some of the deputies were filming the show and doing a lot of stuff for that.
Going
and
over the way and beyond that they edited,
the
cameras. Yeah.
And the way that they edit it, because they have full control over how they edit it. So the cops can choose how that video is edited. And so that's another issue of how people are portrayed and how the cops are portrayed on these shows.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's just amazing that those production companies ever thought that was entertainment. That's why I don't look at them now and salute them or applaud them. For 25 years, you thought cops and their relationship with the community was entertainment. Now, all of a sudden, you got a heart? Get the F out of here.
Now, interestingly enough, that footage that they're looking for, right, A&E has not handed over that footage. And they said that footage has been destroyed. So they said, as is the case with all footage taken by Live PD producers, we no longer retain the unaired footage after learning that the investigation had concluded.
Bull crap. Charlamagne, now you have a production company and you film a lot. Have you ever seen anybody say, no, we destroyed the footage? I know some of these, they have footage for years.
Yeah, but I don't know who has the actual rights to the footage. I don't know if the I don't know if there's a camera crew out there with the actual police officers.
No, there's a camera crew out there with the police officers. There's an actual camera crew out there with the police officers.
Oh, so they got the footage then?
Absolutely.
They definitely got the footage. And by the way, they're not going to get rid of Live PD. Live PD makes too much money. And
that's what I said.
Too high. I don't know. I don't know how cops was doing.
That's what I'm saying. Well, like, you said who's entertaining. Like, people watch it. The ratings were high as hell.
Well, the host of the show, Dan Abrams, tweeted out, to all of you asking whether Live PD coming back, the answer is yes. All of us associated with the show are as committed to it as ever. We are still discussing some specifics, but I want to assure the Live PD nation that we are not abandoning you.
Yeah, I wonder why those networks don't push to defund the police. Like, why don't those networks push to, you know, get the cops that killed Breonna Taylor arrested? Like, do specials about stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Because they have those big platforms. So when you got those big platforms, use them, you know?
All right. Well, I'm Angela Yee, and that is your rumor report.
All right. Now we got front page news next. What are we talking about?
Yes, and let's talk about what's been happening. Voting yesterday, people had to vote. And in Georgia, there were a lot of issues.
All right, we'll get into that next. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha Guy. We are The Breakfast Club. Let's get in some front page news. Where we starting, Yee?
Well, officials in Georgia have launched an investigation into what happened yesterday during Election Day. Now, you know, what they did in Georgia was they actually have to phase out paperless voting machines by this year. So many voting issues were because of these new machines that were provided as part of a contract, a multi-million dollar contract with Dominion Voting Systems. But they're saying in some counties, people were not able to vote. As a matter of fact, Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms tweeted at one point that none of the machines in one precinct were working.
That's crazy.
So some people were waiting online for up to 4 hours. Now, Kamala Harris also tweeted out, voting machines down, limited provisional ballots, hours-long lines. Voter suppression is happening right now across Georgia, particularly in black communities. We can't let this happen in November.
Yeah, but why do we keep falling for the same tricks every year? Like, I keep telling y'all, how do you expect to beat Donald Trump in November when all the same problems, all the same issues and trickery that got him the election in 2016 are still at play this year? Possible Russian interference, voter depression because people aren't enthused about Biden like they weren't about Hillary, and voter suppression, which we saw in Georgia again yesterday.
It seems weird. It's 2020, bro. The fact that these machines, they can't get them working, that there's problems, like, it's 2020. Like, this seems crazy.
Yeah, these are new machines. And the other issue they said were health concerns because of coronavirus. And, you know, some places, because schools are closed, so they had to consolidate some of the locations where you can go vote. They said the state has mailed absentee ballot requests also to registered voters, but not sure how that's going to play into things. So,
you know, polling stations. I got my mail-in ballot yesterday for New Jersey. Okay. And then when you talk to Democrats and ask them,
Are you planning to go in or do you want to mail it in?
I'm probably going to go in.
But yeah, I'm going
to
go in, too.
It's kind of, it's based on where I live at. It's kind of simple for me to vote because it's just like this little church right up the street.
Yeah, for me, too. Yeah, it's very simple for me. But, yeah, I'm going to go in. I don't want to mail it in. It's something to get, you know, stuck in the mail. And there's always been stories of you would hear people stealing the mail. So I'm going to take my ass in.
Yep. I don't trust the mail-in ballots. And then it's sad when you talk to Democrats and ask them how they're going to win in November. And they always say, we hope to have the largest voter turnout in American history. Well, guess what, people? Hope is not a strategy. All right? Is hope the best you can come up with? Jesus Christ.
Okay, do you guys remember Dr. Anthony Fauci?
I heard of him.
Who's that? Who is that?
Well, he's the infectious disease expert who had previously had daily briefings about coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Well, now he is warning that coronavirus is still not over and that the nightmare pandemic isn't even close to over. He said in a period of 4 months, it has devastated the whole world and it isn't over yet. He said there's still a world of uncertainty around the virus, how it spreads, how it impacts the body. He said coronavirus is much more complex than HIV, which is a virus he spent his career studying because of the different levels of seriousness and infections from asymptomatic carriers to patients who end up having fatal conditions. And he said vaccines will be the only way to stop the spread of the coronavirus. And he did express confidence that there is an antidote in the works. So that is what he still had to say about coronavirus. Now, the World Health Organization also had said that it was very rare for asymptomatic coronavirus transmissions to occur. Well, now they're walking back those comments, and here's what they said.
Oh, I was referring to some detailed investigations, cluster investigations, where we had reports from member states saying that when we follow asymptomatic cases, it's very rare that we found a secondary transmission. What I didn't report yesterday was, because this is a major unknown, some modeling groups have tried to estimate what is the proportion of asymptomatic people that may transmit, but some estimates of around 40%. Of transmission may be due to asymptomatic.
I'm sick of who. I need to talk to what and where and why. I don't want to hear from who no more. Exactly. What are they talking about? Why do things change all the time with them?
I don't even know what that statement said.
Me neither. I don't know what she said just now. Can I go outside? Dr. Fauci is like the DJ who's trying to get a packed crowd to go home. Like you interview a DJ. Yes. He's trying to get us a packed crowd, and they're trying to get the people out, and nobody leaving.
It's nobody leaving. Before I let guys, go. You got to go.
People still dancing.
Guys, nope. Police outside. Nope. Guys.
Start playing gospel music. Nobody
gospel
still
music.
Leaving.
They start dancing. Slow music. They start
Lights
dancing.
On. Yep.
Lights on.
Lights
guys.
On in the club.
Be safe. Nobody this is my leaving. Last song. I promise, guys. You got to leave.
Yep. That's Fauci. That's Fauci right now. You're not even paying attention.
That is your front page news.
All right. Now, when we come back, Russell Simmons will be joining us. We're going to kick it with Russell Simmons about all that's going on with him, his allegations. He has a new book and all that. So don't move. Russell Simmons, when we return, it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know a spot, but not just a spot. The spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest on the line.
Yes, indeed.
Uncle Russ, Russell Simmons, welcome.
How you doing, bro?
How are you? Well, first of all, where are you, Russ? Because you never know.
Right now, I'm in my home in Bali.
Bali.
I got stuck here. You know, they closed the borders, and I got stuck, which is fine by me. So I'm still here. I haven't been back since the middle of January.
Wow.
Why Bali? What's so good about Bali? What do you like about Bali?
Man, it's yoga, vegan, Disneyland. And also, I have work here in Asia. I have a talent agency. It's in 13 countries, and Bali is kind of in the middle of all the countries. So it's really a great location. And it's like people come here for self-study and self-realization. And this is a place, a pilgrimage for a lot of people to come. And I think life's only goal is to know the self.
What kind of self-realizations have you had?
Well, it's an ongoing process. I mean, everything we do is find the self. So whether it's through meditation or yoga or just do good deeds or any of it, you know, you move a little quicker. We're all going towards God, like it or not. And we all are discovering the self. But the rate at which we discover the self depends on our effort. So more presence, more happiness.
Oh, Russ, you know, you lost your best friend recently, Andre Harrell, good friend of mine.
Yeah.
How did that impact you?
It impacted me greatly. You know, I was in the middle of writing a book called Eat to Live, a post-pandemic lifestyle. If I can contribute something to our community, it's to support this ongoing movement towards a more healthy diet and healthy choices. I've been a vegan for over 20 years, and the proceeds, as all of my books, the proceeds will go back into the community. And I dedicated it to Andre, who is my closest friend. And the last conversation I had with him was about his diet, and I plugged him into a doctor. And 18 hours later, O'Neill found him. I sent O'Neill to his house. So this broke my heart and made me even more passionate about wanting to spread this message to our community.
Russ, you said that you sent O'Neill to Andre's house. What made you do that?
You know, I speak to Andre, like I said, multiple times a day. And myself, Tracy Maitland, and another friend of his hadn't spoken to him. So I called his son and asked had he spoken to him. And all of us were concerned. So we called his cousin O'Neill and sent O'Neill to his crib. And O'Neill and Cassie went over there, and O'Neill went and found his cousin, and my brother had passed.
You know, I spoke to Andre, too. I guess they said he passed on a Thursday. I spoke to him that Tuesday, and he was actually, I mean, he was speaking to me about a lot of things, but he was speaking to me about a conversation that you, him, and Maxine Waters had.
That's good that you brought that up, because I've been working for over 30 years on police brutality. Ever since After Police came out and Cop Killer, I was the one that had to make sense of those songs. I had to go to Congress, and I worked with New Orleans and Detroit and Baltimore and Philly and various different places with the Nation of Islam. I would go to the police sensitivity trainings, and those trainings were good, and the dialogue between police and community was good, but they never really represented systematic change. Mm-hmm. And for all of this time, the one thing that was always troublesome in our policing system is that the prosecutors have never had the right to prosecute police. And so when they talk about police reform, and I'm excited that they have now a bill that they just introduced,
yep.
That's exciting. But when I watch the news, we don't talk as much about that prosecution point, because police accountability is the core of this discussion.
Are you how involved are you still in NYC politics?
Not so much. I mean, you know, I'm very concerned and excited at the same time about how this bill goes. And see, young people brought us to a point we wouldn't even believe we got here. They got out in the street. They are dedicated to change. And what we need now is to make sure the steering committees, you know what I mean, whoever they are, people like you, you know, leaders of young people, get them on a page to push for the change that they really need, and not to make a choice for them, but to present them with the options. So if young people continue to push and they know what they're pushing for, like that bill that the Black Caucus introduced yesterday, then we will see some real systematic change, and it's the beginning of something new.
Yeah, the Justice Policing Act of 2020. Now, Russell, I want you to do a grounding before we get into this next line of questioning. Do a grounding.
Okay. Okay. Grounded.
Now, have you watched On the Record on HBO?
I have not watched it, but I'm aware. You know, when I first heard about this documentary, I was thrilled to know that Oprah was involved.
Really?
Because I thought, and I told many people, it was impossible for her to go forward. Well, let me back up, because it's something I have to say is much more important. I'm guilty of having underwritten, supported, made the soundtrack for, taken advantage of, and lived in a grossly unjust society. So I know what I'm guilty of, and I've been unconscious as a playboy, and today the title is appropriate, womanizer. And you know, back then I thought it was a game. I dated, if you remember the 80s, and you must remember Robin Givens, and I had a crush on, I had a great relationship with Ray Don Chong, and I fell in love with Troy Baier. I dated Sherry Headley from Coming to America. I went out with Stacey Dash. There were no Black actresses that I didn't date, that they're my friends today. Also to Dutch and German and French and Angolan and Tanzanian and South African supermodels. I went out every night and I looked for new girls to date, and almost all of them are my friends today. And they don't have the experience of me being the monster that the movie makes me to be. So I was thrilled that Oprah took on this movie. And I said, it's absolutely no way she's going to go forward when I present her with 30 witnesses or so who came forward after they saw their friends and children and parishioners on television. And so I felt very confident she'd walk away. She walked away, and she did say that the stories had inconsistencies, not one but all stories, all three girls who were the lead. The stories should not have been printed based on the information I've given. And NBC, New York Magazine, CNN, and many people have passed on those stories. And finally, Oprah and Apple. So I'm sorry that the movie is out, but at the same time, I'm glad they had their moment to say what they wanted to say. I could never say that someone doesn't feel victimized. I can tell you that I don't feel that I victimized them. And how can I say that? I took 9 separate 3-hour lie detector tests. They're available to you. And I just wanted to say that. And I don't know what else to say except I feel terrible about the women who may have felt victimized. I am certainly not a monster or a victimizer.
What do you say to your daughters? Because, you know, I've seen your daughters defend you. You have 2 lovely daughters. So what do you tell your daughters at a time like this?
We've lived in a very toxic masculine society. But I tell them also, as a person who studies this eminent rise of the divine feminine, which is happening in us and around us as men.
That's right.
Inclusivity that we need for women going forward is critical to the survival of the planet. That women have to take their rightful place in leadership and as roles that are more meaningful so that we can survive.
All right, we got more with Russell Simmons. When we come back, don't move. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We're still kicking it with Russell Simmons. Yee.
Russell, how many women have come forward at this point and accused you of sexual assault?
6 or 7. I noticed that when Les Moonves or someone like that was accused, they didn't say that a girl you spoke poorly to was a number because he had 30 of them. They didn't say that in a yoga class that you were adjusting somebody, it looked like you might have been wrong, but it wasn't a girl, it was another girl watching, and they made that a number. When my story came, there were 25 white men. I was the only man of color. They spent a lot of money digging into my past. But did they do that for the famous rock stars? I hung out with Mick Jagger and Steven Tyler and many, many rock stars. The misunderstandings that I refer to and the insensitivity that I might have exuded at that time was kind of typical of the time. I'm an unlikely ally. I've always been a supporter of the women's movement, and I believe that what's happened in Me Too is fantastic and will continue to open more doors for women and change the relationship between men and women to we have a balance.
You know, Russ, when you talk about misunderstandings, because, you know, you're a totally different person back then. When you're a powerful man and you have women working for you in the industry, you know, if you do, you know, push up on them with some type of sexual advance, sometimes women feel like they can't say no. Do you ever think you put a woman in that situation?
Back then, I didn't date the women in the office. I only have one person who ever asked for her expenses and then 1 year later sued me. I have no sexual misconduct of any kind in Def Jam's whole history except the one who's the lead in this movie. But back then, it was pretty normal to have relationships in the office. But I was never interested because, again, it was those actresses I named and all the supermodels. And I was much more interested in what was outside my office. I had a president who was a woman. I had a president of promotion who was a woman. I had a president of A&R who was a woman. And I had a president of marketing. At one time, there's a picture that I have that I pride in 1992. It was the women of Def Jam. And so we had all women running Def Jam. You know, and they were my partners and friends, and we went to work every day together, and we enjoyed a lot of success during that time. What I really want is healing, and I want anyone who feels violated to know how deeply sorry I am, especially what I said about Jay LaMette. I told Oprah, you will find that the 3 leads in your movie are absolutely not credible, and there's no way you're going to make this movie. But I told her then, there's a story that broke my heart with Jay LaMette's story, and when I read it, it made me cry. A week later, she told me Jenny was in the movie. I haven't seen the movie, but I understand that story breaks my heart. And it's a story of I got in the car and I was afraid. And I listened to it and I realized that I was perhaps insensitive. But what I wasn't at the time was a mind reader.
You know, Russ, back in the day, you was on cocaine. You was drunk. All of y'all was on cocaine. It was the 80s, early 90s. Is there any way you could have misconstrued these sexual experiences or even they could have misconstrued the sexual experiences?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying, listen, absolutely, there's a way that some of these experiences, except that I was sober by 90. So I'm going to say that. So, yes, of course, I took a lot of drugs. We were all high. Also, you could have been paranoid when you got in the car and the car door locked, you know, and you did exactly what he said because you didn't want, for fear he might turn violent. You know, when I read that story, it breaks my heart. But like, yes, I could have been high and insensitive and unconsciously callous. But I never, ever felt that I hurt anyone. And I, even then, with all the drugs, I didn't have a violent bone in my body. The misconstrued relationships, I believe, is probably something that not only should we explore in my case, but we should understand that going forward, there's a new sensitivity that men should gain. And, you know, and 30 years ago, it was different.
Do you feel like it has tarnished your legacy at all?
You know, I'm less concerned with my legacy today than I am concerned with what I can do going forward to help the community. I feel like what's happening now, my voice has been muted to some degree. And this is exactly the kind of place where my voice is useful, at least in my own ego. I believe I should be useful. Yeah. Whether it's the health in the community that I talk about and the diet I want to continue to promote. I believe in the equality of women and Black people. And I've always fought for those two things. And I was there fighting for equal pay for women 25 years ago. And I've spoken at the Women's March. And I believe in the next steps that can take it to be inclusive.
You know, one thing about the divine masculine and the divine feminine, the divine masculine, well, not even the divine masculine, the masculine is never aware of our toxic behavior. The divine masculine is aware of the toxic masculinity, but when we're in that toxic state, we're not aware. So can you understand why the women who spoke out against you probably felt like they needed to?
Well, I can understand why some of them did. I do absolutely understand that all the relationships I've had, that some gone wrong and that some women feel victimized, and I certainly believe them in them cases.
What would you say to these women if they were in front of you now? What would you say to them, if anything?
Well, I would say I love you. And I know that in some cases, hurt people hurt people. I don't want to re-victimize, or I don't think we should. I really don't believe we should be relitigating 30-year-old stories that have never been told. Celebrities have big voices. Something happens to a celebrity, everyone relates to it. And so as part of furthering a great agenda, there may be some collateral damage. I wouldn't say this to those women. What I would say to those women in cases where, like a Jane Lamette, I'm so sorry. I never knew you felt this way. I spoke to you 20 times after. I had dinner with Drew Dixon a week after she settled her suit and asked for her expenses. I didn't know you felt this way. So some of these people who I saw over the years so many, many times who never expressed this to me, it breaks my heart to hear their stories.
What about people who say you left for Bali to avoid criminal charges?
There's no, I don't have any civil or criminal charges. I'm back and forth to LA. I was in LA in December, in November, and in New York in December. I went to, took my kids away. I came back. I spent the first 2 weeks in January. I'm here now, stuck, and the borders are opening in the next few days. And I'm back and forth 15 times. So that's just not true.
You know, that's interesting because I see a lot of people going in on the women and saying that they're liars, they're doing this for money. So there is no civil case or a criminal case pending.
There's a civil case that 31 years ago, I don't want to talk about her history or what she said. A woman who I've never met wants $10 million. I'm sure. So that's a civil case, but that's it. And the judge will throw that out, a 2-year statute of limitation. I didn't escape anything. I came to Bali because my school, Tantris, was having a teacher training. And I was going to go either to India to an ashram or to Bali to get out of the media. And I came back home and I went back and back home, back and forth a fifth time I got here. I started to build a house.
as a woman, I know it's really difficult for women to speak up when they feel like something's happened, especially when it involves a celebrity, just because of the level of people who are going to say, oh, she's lying, she wants attention. And even just the threat of not even being able to work in this industry anymore. So what do you think is the motivation for these women to come forward and make these accusations?
I don't think it's for me to say the motivation. There's a lot of psychological profiles and their studies, and lots of people want relevance, and I'm not suggesting that people want to be famous or want money, but you can make that assumption if you like, that some people may want to be famous and even infamous as and I don't want to, you know, you can, what I'd like for you to do, maybe if you're interested, is read some of the stories written by the Black investigative journalists that, and then call the witnesses yourselves. Call their parents.
All right, well, don't move. We got more with Russell Simmons when we come back. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We're still kicking him with Russell Simmons. Charlamagne?
Did Oprah Gayle reach out to you? Did Oprah reach out to you?
I don't want to say too much about Oprah, but I will say that the minute I knew that she was involved in the documentary, I felt that she was my savior. She's going to walk away and tell the world why, because she was interested in the truth. She called, of the 30 witnesses, none of whom appear in the movie, 30 witnesses that I gave to the producers. They wanted to interview me, but they didn't want to interview the 30 witnesses.
Right. You know, it's interesting. It is a Yogi thing, because I haven't heard you call these women a liar.
I don't want to promote anything negative, and I don't want to get in the mud with the accusers. The only reason I told... The only reason I gave them 30 witnesses against the three leads in the movie is because I have daughters. The only reason I took 9 lie detector tests, I took those tests and didn't give them to anybody. I did those for my daughters. So whatever I did unintentionally, I believe the women and I believe me in some cases. I believe Jane LaMette. That's who I believe. She said she thought I might turn violent. She said she was fearful and did what I said. I didn't know. And I never heard from her that this is how she felt. And when I read the story, it brought me to tears.
So I'm getting the feeling that you know you were a shitty person, but you weren't a rapist. That's what you're...
I was a horrible person. I mean, not horrible. We didn't know any better. I'll just tell you, I was just watching Boomerang, and this is honest. I just watched Boomerang. You know, I went out. I had more foursomes than most guys had one girl. If I had a nickel for every girl who didn't get what they deserved out of our relationships, I'd be richer than Puffy or something, but... So I disappointed a lot of people, and I hurt some people. But I'm not a rapist, and I'm not violent. I've never been violent. I've never heard this characterization of me as this monster. So hearing it at 60, it broke my heart. It was one of the most traumatizing experiences, maybe the most traumatizing experience of my life. And I deeply regret for those women who feel victimized. And I don't know how else I can do but just maybe try to make it right by being part of the shift in consciousness that will be more inclusive for women.
Yeah, I want to ask about that when it comes to hip-hop, because, you know, hip-hop, you know, how does hip-hop come to a reckoning about the way we used to treat women? Because it was toxic, you know, the music in the culture, it was rape culture. It was,
and still do, not just did, but...
No, it was worse. It was way worse, though.
Like, but it's still bad.
It was pretty bad.
It was way worse back then. We talked to women violently, pouring drinks on them, like, it's a lie to act like hip-hop wasn't that way. So how do we deal with
that? No. But thousands of years, I don't want us to make this about what Black people did when I hung out with the rock stars and I saw them.
Yeah, America.
And they got stories on stories on stories. Nobody investigated. I'm not asking anybody to relitigate their lives either. But these women who wrote these stories, who grew up, you know, perhaps even almost my age, they didn't... Rock stars were not so good. White men, that's why it was all white men and me. They called everybody. Allison Williams told me, I did her radio show yesterday. She told me that she got 4 or 5 calls, and people would say things like, if you just tell your story, you'll help your sisters. I produced Just Call My Name, 1984, the record. And I produced I Need Your Love and other stuff with Allison over the years. And she's told me how many times she got called. Everybody I know has gotten called. So I told a woman, because I wrote my life story too. I didn't put it out. And there's a chapter called The Awakening, right? And what I've learned in this experience. And I was telling a publisher about my history and how I felt somewhat like a victim. And then I thought, you know, I don't like saying that because I have mixed feelings about it. She said, women have been sitting on it for thousands of years. Just sit on it.
And I do want to say, though, I can never judge how somebody would treat somebody else just because of how they treated me, because I know there's people who have done things to other people. Right. Just because they treated me well doesn't mean that they didn't do something else. So I don't like to categorize, well, I didn't do this to this person, so how could I have done that? You know, and
I certainly am not saying that. I'm telling you that. Like, when I mention all the famous, all the women I've dated over the years, and I mention what they think about me, they don't think I'm capable of being a monster. And I just say that because it does matter that you've had so many compromised situations. And character witnesses matter a little bit. But the 30 witnesses I gave were not character witnesses. They were there at every stage, and they heard different stories over these 30 or 40 years. So they've heard it differently.
Yeah, I've got three more questions, because there's been women with famous voices who said things like Russell has said inappropriate things to me. Like Amanda Seale said, Russell said inappropriate things to me. I've heard, you know, other women say that you said inappropriate things to them.
Look, I'm a deaf comedy jam man. I got a dirty mouth, and I've been inappropriate my whole life. I've been inappropriate and times unconsciously callous, never intentionally callous, ever. I've never been violent. I've never been a rapist. So I've been a lot of things, but I certainly never, ever intended to hurt anyone. And I don't believe that the net effect of my work would be judged as hurtful. But there are people who could have misconstrued, and then they could then think that. But were there a camera in the room, no one would say that I was intentionally hurtful.
Okay, and I want you to answer these two more questions, because I don't know if I got an answer. America, how do we deal with the shitty behavior that we used to display as men? Because I feel like the same way white people got to atone for racism, men, we got to atone for all bullshit. How do we do that?
I think that we should be aware, as we are more now, not only because we're threatened, men are in Hollywood afraid to come out to office. They don't know what's going to happen, what they did, what they might get accused of. That's one thing. And that's good, because it's a wake-up call. But the bridge building and the shift in consciousness, and how do we hire women? How do we empower women? What roles can we find for them that they really suit and would make us and our companies better? And I want to support the growth of women in industry, and I want to support the growth of women in general.
And you include include women in the conversation. When you want to say, what can we do for women, let them also let you know what can be done for us to feel more empowered and for us to be able to express ourselves in the environment and have equality. And you can do that financially, too, with equal pay for women for the same jobs that men do also.
Do you feel like a lot of people are pointing fingers and not necessarily, because, you know, you talk about all the things that you've done in your career, you know, go to Congress, you've hired all these women. Do you feel like people are losing sight of all the things that you did do because of what's...
No, listen, I told myself when I couldn't make sense of this, and in my meditation, I realized it was a karmic effect for having been a shitty guy, for having been a womanizer. So I don't really face heavy, I lost all my 5 charities. Mm-hmm. I lost so many executives. Some are still on the payroll, but I had to lose all my companies and all my charities. I lost my company that was all based on advertising. I lost $30 million. I don't have a lot of money. I don't need money. I'm a billionaire, and God's got me, and I will rebuild.
This is my final question, man. Eckhart Tolle said, life will give you whatever experience is most helpful for the evolution of your consciousness. How do you know this is the experience you need? Because this is the experience you are having at the moment. With that said, how is your consciousness elevated because of everything you've been going through? Everything.
I feel like God has given me a chance to speed up my evolution. I feel like I'm where God wants me, and I feel like I can be useful. And I read that book. It was the first time I've truly understood yoga, this idea of awareness and presence. After reading all the yoga sutras and scriptures, I read that book. The Power of Now. And he really helped me quite a bit to intellectualize, at least, so to understand what we all do everything for. So I'm deeply appreciative of that book. I don't know if you know, I gave Oprah that book. No one had ever heard of it. Mm. I read that book and it changed my life.
Russell, thank you, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure talking to you on and off air, man.
Absolutely.
I love you. God bless you. Thank you so much for having me on. And thank you, Angela.
Okay, guys. Thank you, Russell.
All right. Thank you, Russ.
Russell Simmons. It's
time. She's spilling the tea.
This is the Rumor Report with Angela Yee on The Breakfast Club.
Yes, so James Dolan, as you know, this has been an ongoing thing as people feel like he should have made a statement. And allegedly, some of the New York Knicks players and people that work at the franchise are very upset that there's been no statement. Well, originally, James Dolan sent out an email to employees explaining that we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. And that email was leaked publicly. And then he had to put out a second email where he condemned racism in stronger terms. But again, this was not anything that was released publicly. Well, now the Knicks Instagram account does have a statement. And that statement is, every one of us has a role to play in creating a just and equal society where there is no racism, bigotry, violence, or hate. We stand for all who act for positive change.
Oh, somebody tell the Knicks, just post the black box, yo. Just post the black box.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, and so that was that. I saw Jesus wrote, defund the Knicks. But
Drop on a clues bomb for Jesus. Knicks
that's
already
disappointing,
defunded, by the way.
Well, yeah, according to Jalen and Jacoby, they've been making more. The value of the Knicks have gone up every single year. So
yeah, people still go to the games. I don't know why, but yeah, no, they still go to the games.
Yeah, I'm talking about defunded as far as players. Uh-oh. Our roster trash.
Yeah, nobody wants to play for the Knicks. Which sucks.
All right. Now, the CrossFit CEO has resigned. We told you about all the backlash that CEO Greg Glassman actually had received. And he's also the founder. Well, he has officially stepped down as head of the company. And that's for a couple of different things. You know, there were some comments that he made in a company Zoom call. He said, we're not mourning for George Floyd. And in addition to that, he had a very rude joke that he made on social media where, you know, he was just mocking the death of George Floyd. Well, now he has stepped down and he'll be replaced by Dave Castro. A lot of people have disassociated themselves from the company. Reebok severed ties with CrossFit right after Glassman posted that tweet that was very offensive to people. And in addition, they said he also sent out derogatory and offensive emails to gym owner Alyssa Royce. So he's gone. All right, Damian Lillard has also put out a powerful spoken word. It's called Blacklist, and this is honoring George Floyd and other police brutality victims. Here's a portion of that.
I feel the tension rising. 1950, how we divided. And I ain't even tripping on how the season decided. Racism pandemic is years ahead of the virus. Really mean it, but they gonna try to play us as tyrants. Look, Ali wasn't the greatest just because his hands worked. Front line for his people, this was a man's work. Before he let the black people down, he let the fans hurt. So if the stars is aligned, that mean it can work. Don't need approval, I always been doing God's work. Even before I was in a Bentley like Farnsworth. Make me sick to my stomach to see these moms hurt. Tommy Smith, fist in the air, this what our bond worth.
Drop on the clues, the whole thing, Damian Lillard.
Yeah, shout out to Damian Lillard.
Yes, the whole track, Blacklist, is nearly 3 minutes and it's on his SoundCloud, so that was him, a portion of him just expressing everything. And I encourage everybody to go listen to that. You know, he goes by Dame Dalla. Yeah. And he's an artist.
Damian Lillard is really nice.
He's a dope rapper.
Basketball. And Dame Dalla is really good at rap as well.
Yes, he is.
All right, B. Simone. Now, some people have some things to say about comments that she made on Nick Cannon's show, where she talks about her dating life and what her deal breakers are in a relationship. Here's what she had to say.
Tall,
a little older.
Older? What's the
older
age?
He can't have a 9-to-5.
Why not? You don't want him to have an honest job?
He could be a hustling entrepreneur.
So you want him to be you want CEO status?
Yes.
Okay. He can't clock in and clock out.
No.
Damn, B. Simone.
Entrepreneurs should date entrepreneurs.
All right. So she doesn't want to date somebody with a 9-to-5. Here's what else she had to say to Nick Cannon.
Everything I have, my dream career, I manifested it. I'm trying to manifest a husband. Ain't nothing wrong with a 9-to-5. I get it. They work hard. I used to have a 9-to-5. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is wrong. I need an entrepreneur. I need somebody that understands my mindset. Somebody that has the same lifestyle. It has nothing to do with money, everything to do with lifestyle. When I'm in the bed at 3 a.m. checking emails, what you doing, babe? Working? What she doing? Working? Okay, love you. You want to hop on a flight tomorrow? I have a meeting in out of town. You want to go? You got that? Let's go. Okay, you understand my life.
So people definitely reacted to this on social media. What do you think about it?
I mean, I don't understand it. I don't get it. it's nothing wrong with somebody working a 9-to-5, but everything is in preference. If that's what she prefers, that's what she prefers. I don't see anything wrong with anybody having a 9-to-5 and working. So, I mean,
I would be upset if I wanted to date B. Simone and I was furloughed or fired from my 9-to-5. All right, that would make me feel away. I don't understand why she 9-to-5 shaming people. What's wrong with having a job?
Yeah, I don't know. And a lot of times people do have a 9-to-5 and make way more money than entrepreneurs do, or can be even, you know, some entrepreneurs, just because you're an entrepreneur doesn't mean that you're A, successful, or B, super motivated either.
Correct.
Anybody calls themselves an entrepreneur nowadays.
And that's her preference, and she's entitled to her preference, but I just don't understand what's the problem with somebody having a 9-to-5 job.
I don't understand.
9-to-5 jobs make great money. And even if they don't make great money, if you're making a living, be happy. Like, that's what I care about.
What if you have a 9-to-5 and you're an entrepreneur? Then does that count?
You can do both.
You should be doing both. There's 168 hours in a week. So once you do your 9-to-5, you should be putting some money towards, you know, whatever your entrepreneur dreams are. But I just don't see the point of shaming somebody with a 9-to-5. Like, there's nothing wrong with a 9-to-5 job. Jobs are good, people. You know how you know they're good? Because there's 40 million people right now, 40 plus million people who don't have one, and they would gladly take one of those 9-to-5 jobs.
Absolutely.
And keep food on their goddamn table. So I don't know
so
what y'all
So you
want to
call somebody
about.
Your daddy?
Huh?
No, she's talking about Dame Dash. Dame Dash.
I was like, what?
Just came out the blue.
Listen, a job is a job. Salute to everybody out there who has a job right now. You are blessed.
Absolutely.
And trust me, it's 40-plus million people out there who wish they had a job. Well, maybe they don't, though, because that unemployment is booming, the people that can get it. Because 44% mm-hmm. of those people can't get the unemployment.
And there's people who have 9-to-5s that are actually doing that because they're hustling to actually start their own business, too. You know, in order to own a Chick-fil-A, you have to work there.
Absolutely. Ain't nothing wrong with a 9-to-5. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with a 9-to-5.
All right. Well, I'm Angela Yee, and that's your rumor report.
All right. Charlamagne, who are you giving that donkey to?
You know, we need the New York, what's his title? New York Police Union President Michael Mara to come to the front of the congregation. We'd like to have a word with him.
All right. We'll get into that next. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Charlamagne, say the gang, donkey of the day. Charlamagne.
You are a donkey.
It's time for Donkey of the Day.
Donkey of the Day does not discriminate.
I might not have the song of the day, but I got the Donkey of the Day.
So if you ever feel I need to be a donkey, man, hit me with the heat.
Yes, the Breakfast Club, bitches.
Who's Donkey of the Day today?
Donkey of the Day for Wednesday, June 10th, goes to New York Police Union President Mike O'Mara. Now, we all know that people's worldview is based off their own personal experiences. We all see things differently. Even if we are looking at the same thing, we all feel things differently. Even if we are experiencing the same thing, we all hear and comprehend things differently, even if we are listening to the same thing. That's just the world we live in. I try to be tolerant of people's worldview. No, tolerant isn't the right word. I try to be indifferent about people's worldview. I strive, keyword strive, because I definitely don't always get that right. I strive to be indifferent of people's worldview, because unless someone's worldview is actually dangerous to my and others' existence, I don't feel the need to challenge it. That's just how they feel. And that's just how they see things. There lies the problem with a lot of folks, though. You know, worldviews are dangerous. A lot of folks' worldview actually causes harm and danger to others. And that's exactly where we are with Mike O'Mara. Now, of course, you know it's been protests in New York City in regards to the death of George Floyd. NYPD has a long history of police brutality and police killings. Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Eric Garner, just to name a few. You got cops like Francisco Garcia. Do y'all remember him? He kind of went under the rug, right? Remember he tased and punched that young man a few weeks back? He's been named in 7 lawsuits settled by New York City police for $210,000. Literally, before the protest, we were complaining about the NYPD and how they were going through black and brown neighborhoods, putting hands on people who weren't social distancing, but treating white folks with the utmost respect. Since then, anybody with an Instagram or a Facebook can see videos of police being violent towards protesters. Okay, it didn't stop, all right? It actually got worse. We've seen them shove protesters. We've seen them pepper spray peaceful protesters. We've seen them beating delivery guys with nightsticks. We've seen them drive a police vehicle into a crowd of protesters in Brooklyn, okay? I haven't heard any officer apologize or say that was wrong. Not saying it hasn't happened. I just haven't heard it publicly, okay? I haven't seen it. Hell, Mayor de Blasio defended it. He said, and I quote, "If a police officer is in that situation, they have to get out of that situation," end quote.
De Blasio sounds like Marshawn Lynch saying he got to run through a mother effer's face. Okay, if you got to run through a mother effer's face, run through that face. All right, when you hear the mayor say that, when you hear the celebrity in chief Donald J. Trump say things like he said yesterday, the 75-year-old man who got pushed to the ground, skull cracked open, was a setup from Antifa. When you hear stuff like that, you realize how deep the corruption goes in these police departments, and you realize why nothing ever changes. If the mayor don't care, if the celebrity in chief, the president don't care, why would these cops ever care? They're not being held accountable because the people in charge don't hold them accountable. Now, would you like to hear what New York Police Union President Michael Mara said yesterday? Let's hear it.
Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect. We've been left out of the conversation. We've been vilified. It's disgusting. Trying to make us embarrassed of our profession. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive. Nobody talks about all the police officers that were killed in the last week in the United States of America, and there were a number of them. We don't condone Minneapolis. We roundly reject what he did as disgusting. It's not what we do. It's not what police officers do. Our legislators abandoned us. The press is vilifying us. Well, you know what, guys? I'm proud to be a cop, and I'm going to continue to be proud to be a cop until the day I retire.
O'Mara said police officers have been left out of the discussion. No, you guys are the discussion. All right, this is actually all about you and the way you treat citizens of this country. In fact, if police weren't out here killing unarmed black and brown folks, killing unarmed white folks, if they weren't out here pushing 75-year-old men to the ground and slamming women on their faces in mall parking lots, then we wouldn't be here. Okay, Mike, have you seen the same videos I've seen? I'm starting to think there really is a whole different Instagram and Twitter I don't have access to because you want people to stop treating cops like animals and thugs when the reality is y'all the ones acting like the animals and thugs. You want people to start treating cops with some respect. Well, respect is a two-way street. If you want to get it, you've got to give it. Okay, I believe in that quote, but not in regards to the police, because you can listen to the police, be courteous to the police, be respectful to the police, and cops will still be the holes of an ass. I had to say it like that because you can't say holes on the radio for some reason. But my point is, Mike O'Mara, you said you don't condone what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd. But how do you feel about what happens right here in New York? How do you feel about the NYPD? We don't have to leave this city. Do you think cops driving a police SUV into a crowd of protesters, is that the respect you're talking about? Is the way Francisco Garcia handles people when he tases them and punches them, is that the respect you want from us? I mean, we are only giving back what we are receiving. And Mike says 375 million interactions between officers and the public, and all of them were peaceful. A majority of them were peaceful. I don't remember how he said it, but I just want to know, why is there 375 million interactions? And who keeps counting that kind of stuff? Why is there more interactions with officers and the public than there is actual people in America? I know for a fact the public isn't coming up to the cops, you know, asking them what they smoking. You know, I know the public isn't pulling over cops for any reason, you know, so why is it so many interactions? Anyway, the moral of the story is this. We don't care, we don't care, we don't care, okay? Y'all gonna stop killing people and beating people up for no reason. We are gonna continue to push for legislation like the Justice in Policing Act of 2020. That bans the type of chokeholds that killed George Floyd, that bans no-knock warrants in drug cases so the likelihood of situations like the ones that killed Breonna Taylor don't happen. New York passed the Eric Garner Anti-Chokehold Act, making it a felony to injure or kill using a chokehold like the one that killed Eric Garner. We are going to continue to push for those types of things, and if that is what you call treating cops like thugs and animals, if that's what you call treating cops with no respect, then so be it. Okay, if you can live with cops like Francisco Garcia, if you can live with cops driving trucks through crowds of peaceful protesters, then we the people can live with you being mad simply because, finally, for the first time ever that I can remember, cops are being held accountable for their BS. Please let Remy Ma give New York Police Union President Michael Mara the biggest hee-haw.
Hee-haw, hee-haw, you stupid motherfucker, are you dumb?
All right. Well, thank you for that donkey today, Charlemagne.
Yes, sir.
Now, when we come back, yesterday, Angela Yee and Angie Martinez got a chance to speak with Breonna Taylor's mom, Tamika Palmer. So they're going to talk to her when we come back. So don't move. Very serious. Very powerful. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Now, Angela Yee and Angie Martinez got a chance to speak with Breonna Taylor's mom, Tamika Palmer, yesterday.
Yes, and it was really important and powerful that we do something like that because Breonna Taylor, everybody's been saying her name. Her 27th birthday would have been on Friday, but a lot of people don't know the details of how she was killed by police officers and just what Breonna Taylor's mom, Tamika Palmer, was dealing with after her daughter was murdered by the police.
So let's get into the interview now.
One of the reasons I really wanted Angela and I to do this together is because I was really, you know, I didn't really think about it until Lanita and everyone, and Tamika Mallory, who were on the call, shared with us that sometimes getting justice for women, it seems harder to get people's attention and get people organized and get people riled up. And that really disturbed me. Mm-hmm. And we were on a group full of incredible women. Each person on that Zoom vowed to be committed to getting Breonna's story out there and to getting people to understand that something actually can be done and needs to be done. And Angela and I were just part of a large group of women who also made that commitment. And we thought that together that we could use both of our platforms to help get Breonna's story out. And the hashtag has been trending and everybody knows what happened. But I would love to hear from you, Tamika, exactly what happened to your daughter.
She was killed by Louisville Metro Police Department. Friday, March the 13th, they went into her home for a warrant or something or another. Did not announce themselves. Scared the crap out of her and her boyfriend, who apparently let off a shot, and then they proceeded to shoot 20-something times into the home and shot her 8 times.
Okay, so the reason why they went into Breonna's home was they said they were looking for somebody who didn't even live at that address who was allegedly selling drugs out of the house, and that person had already been in custody.
Right.
Prior to them even entering the home.
Exactly.
We hear conflicting stories about whether he actually lived there at some point or he used to live there. You actually told us that that's not true at all.
Yeah, he's never lived there. Mm-hmm.
And they had what was called a no-knock warrant. So can you break down what is a no-knock warrant? Because this was my first time hearing about this, too. I didn't know you could just barge into somebody's house, break down the door, and not even announce yourselves. And there are some discrepancies on whether or not the police announced that they were there, announced that they had a warrant, or if they just broke in because apparently both Breonna and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, thought that somebody was breaking into their home. And he was a licensed gun owner and did fire at the police because he thought that somebody was breaking in, correct?
Correct. He fired at the police. He also called the police because he did not know that these were police officers coming into the home. So apparently, like you said, there's no knock there. They can come there, bust down the door, and just come in. They hit the door with a battering ram several times. Breonna and Kenny both were screaming, "Who is it? Who's at the door?" They never announced themselves, but when they first released their story, they said that they announced themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kenny, several neighbors, no one heard them announce themselves.
Right. And so what was even more shocking to me was that Kenneth was actually charged with shooting a police officer with was it attempted murder that he was charged with at first?
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to set this scene because hearing the story from you personally really changed some of the perspective I had. Well, not that I had any other perspective except that justice should be done for Breonna, but it just really, I really understood the moment and how it happened that this young girl, this seemingly amazing girl who had a career in to help people. Clearly she cared about people. She was a healthcare provider. She was a EMT worker, was home minding her business in her own apartment, and somebody busts into her house. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm understanding, even though the police say that they announced themselves, this is a small apartment, correct? This is a complex where if there was police activity, a neighbor, somebody in the hallway, I mean, is it the type of apartment where you hear your neighbors? Like,
yeah, there's not a hallway. Each person has their own door, but it's a very small square there that you go in to get into these there's 8 apartments in each building. So, yeah, you absolutely will hear somebody out there. So, any of the neighbors would tell you she's pretty quiet. They never really ever heard her. You know, they saw her coming and going going to work, or, you know, coming and going with her my other daughter, which is her little sister. They never really made a lot of noise. So to hear all of this stuff going on would alarm people.
Have these police officers been charged with anything yet?
No.
No, they haven't been charged. They haven't even been fired.
No, they're on administrative leave, so they're still being paid by the police department.
And what's shocking is this happened March 13th.
Yes.
Yeah, one of the saddest things that I learned from you, Tamika, on the phone yesterday, and I heard you say also at one of the protests, was that you have felt alone for quite a while. Like, people are stepping up now and really demanding justice and really inspired by some of the other things that are happening in this country, that people are like, okay, let's focus on Breonna now. But you have been fighting this fight since the day you lost your daughter.
Absolutely. And I felt alone because, you know, you hear these different stories all the time. The police go in, it's a raid going bad, people are shooting. So you think these people were selling drugs and shot at the police. So people kind of moved on, when in fact that wasn't the case at all.
Hi, we have more with Tamika Palmer, which is Breonna Taylor's mom, and Angie Martinez and Yee. When we come back, it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Now, if you just joined us, Angie Martinez and Angela Yee had a chance to speak with Tamika Palmer yesterday. That's Breonna Taylor's mom. So let's get back into part two of the interview. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Where were you when you found out? Like, who called you? How did you even know something was happening?
Kenny called me, her boyfriend. I was home in bed. Kenny called me and said that somebody kicked in the door and he thinks Breonna is shot. And I'm like, what do you mean you think she's shot? Where is he? He said he couldn't see. Like, he had, like, he was yelling her name and, like, screaming for her. But so, of course, I jump up and we get disconnected. I drop the phone and whatnot. But so I get dressed and I head over there. But in the middle of me heading over there, I'm calling Kenny's phone. He's not answering. So I'm calling Breonna's phone and she's not answering. And so when I get to her street, it's lined with police. There's an officer at the end of the road who I tell that I need to get through there. Something's going on with my daughter. She tells me that I needed to get to the hospital, that two ambulances had been through. One took an officer and the other took the girl, whoever was hurt. And when I get to the hospital, I'll tell them why they're there. So they check. She comes back and said, well, she's not here. And I said, well, I don't know. Maybe I got here before her. And so I sat there for about 2 hours. And the lady comes out and says, well, ma'am, there's no recollection of this person even being on the way. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I needed to get back to the apartment.
They sent you to the hospital knowing that she was not at the hospital?
Yeah.
And she was still in the apartment?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, what did they say to you? What details did they give you? Like, why did they say this even happened?
Well, at that point, they didn't. No one knew what was quite going on. But once I got back, I was able to get through a little more, so I was closer to the apartment. And there were some more officers kind of standing there hanging around. So I told them who I was and that I needed to get into the apartment and see what was going on with my daughter. So they told me to hang tight, that a detective would come over and talk to me. And so we stood out there about 2 hours before the detective came over. So when he comes over, again, we introductions, who I am, who he is. And so he asked me if I knew of anybody who would want to hurt Breonna or Kenny. And so, of course, I say, no, of course not. Like,
Why would they ask you that when they knew who did that to her?
Well, at this point, they still hadn't told me who did this and what happened.
Oh.
So So I asked, where's Kenny? You know, like, I need to talk to Kenny. And so he told me to hang tight. So he came back about another hour and a half, 2 hours later, and he asked, had Breonna and Kenny been having any problems? And I'm like, are you insinuating Kenny did something to Breonna? Because Kenny would never hurt her. And so at this point, I'm screaming, where's Kenny? I need to talk to Kenny. So he says, well, Kenny's at one of our offices trying to help us piece together what happened here tonight. I asked about the officer being shot. I said, well, why was there, they said an officer was shot. He said, well, he was here responding to a call. And I said, a call for what? And he said, well, there were some officers there to serve a narcotics warrant. And I said, for who? Because Brianna and Kenny ain't selling no narcotics. And he said he wasn't for sure. He hadn't seen the warrant. And I said, well, I want to see the warrant. And he said, well, that he didn't know where it was, that they hadn't seen it, that it could have gotten lost in the shuffle of things. So he tells us to wait again. So it was probably about 11 a.m. when he comes back over and tells us it'll be a little bit longer, they'll be wrapping up, and that we'll be able to get into the house. And I say, well, why won't you tell me where Brianna is? I need to see Brianna. And he says, well, she's still in the apartment.
Wow. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that we have to make you tell this story. And even...
But it's important that people know the details of what it is that you went through, the cover-ups. And yeah. I can't even imagine how that must feel to know that they gave you the runaround like that at that time. And the only thing you want to know is, where is my daughter?
Exactly. And so when he says she's in the apartment, I knew what that meant at that time. So I said, well, I want to see her. I need to see her. I need to know that it's her. And he said, well, we've identified her through paperwork. And I said, well, how do you know it's her? Because there's two women that live in that apartment. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yes, I'm sure, because my other daughter lives in that apartment. But at the time, I knew she wasn't home, but I wanted to see Brianna. He said that I still couldn't see her, that it would be up to the coroner. So the coroner finally arrives, and it was about 1:30 p.m. when the coroner comes out and says, you know, that I wouldn't be allowed to see her, and that they've already identified her. And so they kind of just, some other people, like, snuck her away in this van while the coroner was talking to us.
Has at any point anyone apologized to you?
No.
Has at any point... I'm sorry, what were we going to say?
Let's give her a moment.
I'm okay.
Okay, no, we really do appreciate you for your strength in being able to relay this story. I know you've told it countless times, and we just want people to hear your story, and we want some action to be taken. What does justice look like for you now?
These officers being fired and arrested. If anybody else would have done it, they'd be arrested. So they obtained a warrant under a lie. They told several stories, and so they should be arrested. I mean, they lied. There was no reason for them to be there. And the person you wanted, so you proclaimed to want it, was in custody. So to go in there at 1 a.m. and scare her and kill her.
So what can we do now? Right.
What do we do now? How do we help? I know the system is one conversation, but how do we help Tamika get justice for her daughter right now as a community? What can we do?
Contact the mayor's office to fire the office, to have the officers involved fired. That's Officer Brett Hankinson, Miles Cosgrove, and John Mattingly. They need to be terminated from their positions. Daniel Cameron, the Kentucky Attorney General, needs to charge the officers and prosecute them aggressively. And then we also have this Thursday, Metro Council will be voting on Brianna's law. And as it is written now, is to significantly limit the use of no-knock warrants to only the most egregious of offenses like kidnapping, murder, human trafficking. But there is discussion to make that a complete ban on no-knock warrants. And we do think that that is important. So those are the three things right off the bat, is ban no-knock warrants, terminate the officers, and charge and aggressively prosecute.
Wow. Well, it took a lot of strength for Tamika Palmer to even be able to tell this story and have to relive those events again. But the full interview is on the Breakfast Club YouTube page. Angie Martinez will also be airing the interview during her show later on today.
And again, those officers' names are Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly, Officer Brett Hankinson, and Officer Miles Cosgrove. So we do want to make sure that at least for the sake of the family, for Breonna Taylor's friends, and just in general, we want to make sure that there is some justice here. So you can, again, go look and see the full interview on the Breakfast Club YouTube page.
All right. And when we come back, we got rumors on the way, so don't move. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club. The Rumor Report.
Angela Yee.
It's the Rumor Report.
The Breakfast Club.
Well, first of all, y'all know I love me some Lizzo. And Lizzo came through with a great message because she has been working out and she posts her workout all the time. And here's what she had to say.
So I've been working out consistently for the last 5 years. But I'm not working out to have your ideal body type. I'm working out to have my ideal body type. And you know what type that is? None of your business, because I am beautiful. And worry about your own goddamn body, because health is not just determined on what you look like on the outside. Health is also what happens on the inside, and a lot of y'all need to do a f-ing cleanse for your insides.
Yes, I love it.
She's right. What's on the inside is very important. Invest in your mental wealth. It's clear Lizzo in shape, though. I mean, you could tell when she dances on stage.
Yeah, her performances be amazing. So
For you to be that big and be able to move like that, you're definitely in shape.
All right. Now, Russell Westbrook is going to be executive producing Terror in Tulsa. It's a docuseries for Blackfin, and that is to mark the upcoming 100th anniversary of the infamous Tulsa Race Massacre. And so that should be really interesting to watch. And as you know, we've talked about this previously, Dream Hampton is also going to be directing Black Wall Street. That's a limited documentary series about the Tulsa Race Massacre for Cineflex Productions as well. So these stories are being told.
Yeah, and those are great stories because they inspire, because a lot of the things that, you know, Black people talk about now as far as, you know, Black ownership and, you know,
financial freedom, generational wealth and owning, yep.
These aren't new conversations. These things have happened before. Like these in the Black Wall Street is one of those stories.
All right. Now, Lionel Richie has a musical coming, All Night Long. That's in the works from Disney. It's going to be a movie based on the songs. Yeah, so that should be interesting to watch. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, I think that's dope. I like that.
I like anything that's like based on, you know, real life people and musicals in particular. So I'll be interested to watch that. All right. Anna Wintour, you know her from being the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. And she's the person that everybody wants to befriend so they can go to the Met Gala and all of that. Well, she has admitted that Vogue has been hurtful and intolerant and not done enough to promote Black staff and designers. We've been through this. She said, I want to start by acknowledging your feelings and expressing my empathy toward what so many of you are going through, sadness, hurt, and anger too. I want to say this especially to the Black members of our team. I can only imagine what these days have been like, but I also know that the hurt and violence and injustice we're seeing and talking about have been around for a long time. Recognizing it and doing something about it is overdue. So, you know, Vogue, and that's something that people have looked to for so long, and just as like such a big deal to be on the cover of Vogue, and they're still having like a lot of first moments, like first Black photographer, first this, and it's like, come on, Vogue, let's get with the times. Now, one of the co-creators of Friends, Marta Kaufman, also confessed that she should have been more diligent in addressing the very white show's lack of diversity. She said, I wish I knew then what I know today. I would have made very different decisions. I mean, we've always encouraged people of diversity in our company, but I didn't do enough. And now all I can think about is what can I do? What can I do differently? How can I run my show in a new way? And that's something I not only wish I knew when I started show running, but I wish I knew all the way up through last year. And, you know, people talk about Friends all the time and how there's no Black people on Friends ever. And that's been a conversation that people have been having for quite some time.
Yes, and Friends is just a ripoff of Living Single. Let's be clear on that. Okay,
I never watched Friends. I never watched it at all.
Me neither.
I definitely have watched Friends because it used to come on so much that sometimes you just turn on the TV. And I used to watch Seinfeld, and I feel like Friends used to come on right after Seinfeld or something. But for some reason, like, I'll randomly know certain episodes.
I never watched Seinfeld.
I never watched none of that.
I love Seinfeld. I'm not gonna lie.
Friends.
Nope, I never watched none of the older. I never watched Cheers. I never watched none of that stuff.
I used to watch Cheers.
I never watched none of it. I know the theme song, but I never watched it.
I like Seinfeld. I used to think it was pretty funny. So, all right, now Neo has faced some backlash after he spoke at George Floyd's funeral. So, and you can tell he did not have any intention of having to go up there and speak, and maybe he just misspoke, but here's what he said, because he actually sang "It's So Hard to Say Goodbye" to yesterday in honor of Mr. Floyd, and here's what he said.
This man changed the world. Changed the world for the better. So I just want to personally thank George Floyd for his sacrifice so that my kids can be all right later on. I appreciate the sacrifice, my brother. I genuinely do. Sorry, I ain't coming to talk. All right.
He received backlash?
Well, over him saying that George Floyd sacrificed himself so that his children can live. And I think, you know, the truth of the matter is he didn't sacrifice. He just was murdered by the police.
He was murdered.
It wasn't something that he intended to do. And I don't think Neo meant any harm by that, by the way. What he meant to say was, let's not let George Floyd's death go in vain. Let's not let his murder go in vain. I don't think that George Floyd was like, I'm sacrificing for people's kids. But I just think that's what he really meant. And sometimes
he's uncomfortable. He's singing at a funeral. Words just came out of his mouth. We know what Neo meant, man. And what Neo said was, yes, George Floyd died, and hopefully my kids will have a better life because of what happened. That's all he meant.
Right.
Let's not let it go in vain.
I'm sure that's what he meant.
Yeah, I don't know what Neo meant, but I know that, you know, Jesus got murdered, and they say Jesus made a sacrifice. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X got murdered, and people say they made a sacrifice. So what makes it a sacrifice when you're doing work that you know ultimately will get you killed? Because I don't think George Floyd wanted to get murdered, but if you believe in God and you believe everything happens for a reason, then maybe it was a sacrifice, especially if it serves a greater purpose. The question is, if you knew something like that had to happen to you to bring about universal systemic change in the hearts and minds of people and laws, would you do it? Would you make that sacrifice? That should be the question.
Right. Well, you know, I just think that Neo didn't mean any harm. So I just wanted to put that out there, because clearly he's performing at this man's funeral and doing that. And I'm sure that's not something that you get paid to do. Like, you just do it because you want to, because you care, and you care about the family and you care about the friends. And so I'm sure his intentions were good, and we have to think about people's intentions at times as well. All right, I'm Angela Yee, and that is your rumor report.
All right, thank you, Miss Yee. Now, shout out to Revolt. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Everybody else, the People's Choice Mix is up next. Get your request in. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Now, we got a shout out to Russell Simmons for joining us this morning, all the way from Bali.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. It's up on YouTube right now. Conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know you will.
Oh, they already have. And also, we have to shout out to Angie Martinez's Angela Yee for doing an interview with Breonna Taylor's mom, Tamika Palmer.
Yes, and I just want to let people know, if you want to also make those calls to make sure that these police officers, these three officers, are charged, are fired, you can call the Kentucky Attorney General's office. His name is Daniel Cameron, and that number is 502-696-5300. That's 502-696-5300.
All right. All right, when we come back, we got the positive note, so don't move. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Good morning. We'll see you guys later on. Now, Charlamagne, you got a positive note?
I do, man. It's really simple this morning. If you're helping someone and expecting something in return, you're doing business, not kindness.
Breakfast Club, bitches! Y'all finished or y'all done?
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears. Real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
All right, so there we were, cruising through the new open-air zoo, when I realized that the park was closing in like 15 minutes. Luckily, we were in my Nissan Rogue. With its powerful V6 turbo engine, well, we had time to see all the animals.
Whoa! And outrun a few!
Drive the Nissan Rogue.